If you listen to Solving JFK a lot, you know that I like to keep the vibes up. And that's why I'm a fan of federally legal cannabis from Mood.com. It's a brand that uses small organic farms to source its pesticide-free legal weed. You can get 20% off of your first order at Mood.com by using code JFK. My favorite product of theirs is the functional THC gummies. Usually I go with Epic Euphoria, but I also like Magic Mind and the Pure Relief CBD gummies. These legal weed gummies take about 20 minutes to kick in, and you can control the dosage yourself. Unlike the federal government, Mood.com has never sold drugs to fund illegal wars or clandestine missions. Thanks, Mood.com. So try out some of the excellent legal cannabis products from Mood.com and get a 20% discount off of your first order using code JFK. Each year, around November 22nd, JFK assassination experts, wannabe experts, enthusiasts, and those genuinely interested in finding out what really happened make their way to the annual assassination conferences. In anniversary years that are a round number as measured from 1963, the attendance is even higher than normal. Now, we'll be diving into Oswald's childhood very soon. But first, in this bonus episode of Solving JFK, I'll take you with me to the 60th anniversary JFK assassination conference at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh so that you can get an idea of what Warren Report critics talk about when they get together, including clips and interviews from a few names you may know.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas. The first reports say that President Kennedy has been seriously wounded by this shooting.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
This is Solving JFK. I'm your host, Matt Crumpton. About this time last year, I decided that if I want to be a serious JFK assassination podcaster, then I have to go out and meet people who have been studying this case for far longer than I have. So I went to Dallas to see if I could pick up any new information at the conference there in 2022. I certainly learned from the presentations over those next few days, but the best part was meeting other JFK assassination truth seekers. In the lobby on that first night in Dallas, I ended up meeting author and Oliver Stone collaborator James DiEugenio and two other guys, Paul Blow, a professor from Quebec, and Mark Adamczyk, an attorney from Tampa. After having a few drinks, visiting Dealey Plaza, and grabbing lunch at a nearby diner, we started talking, and it ended up leading to us writing a book that recently came out, which I'll be discussing soon in a bonus episode to come. After such a great experience in Dallas last year, I was really looking forward to the 60th anniversary conference hosted by the Cyril Wecht Institute of Science and Law at Duquesne University in Pittsburgh. My goal for this conference was to meet more folks who may be able to help me with this quest in trying to solve the JFK assassination and to see if I could learn anything I didn't already know. The conference this year was a success on both of those fronts. I should mention that if you're a Warren Report defender, then the case has already been solved. That's why Gerald Posner named his influential book Case Closed. When there's nothing else to solve, you don't have any need to hear the latest development or discussion of a recently declassified document because it all leads back to the same place, which is that Oswald did it alone. That's also why there's not a single JFK assassination conference that combines presentations from Warren Report supporters and critics. And I'm also not aware of any JFK assassination conferences that are put on by Warren Report defenders, at least not ones that occur every year. If there was one, I would definitely go check it out. The 60th anniversary conference kicked off with a talk from actor Alec Baldwin. Yes, that Alec Baldwin. The guy who plays Jack Donaghy on 30 Rock, starred in a bunch of really famous movies, and who most recently gained infamy for accidentally killing a woman on the set of a film. I get that a lot of people don't really care what Alec Baldwin has to say, but he's been studying the JFK assassination for years, and I thought he gave a nice talk. He spoke about three dreams that he has, the first being that he goes to heaven and God shows him a full view of what really happened in the JFK assassination. Here's what he said his other two dreams are.
My second dream is that we take J. Edgar Hoover's name off the offices of the Justice Department. Disgrace to everything I believe. Third, is that we continue to build our case, page by page, file by file, box by box, knowing that the truth is somewhere in there. We only need to keep digging.
There were dozens of presentations over the next few days, and while I don't have time to share the details of every single one of them, here's a quick list of the highlights. Dr. Josiah Thompson and Dr. Gary Aguilar presented their theory about a second headshot that came from the school book depository after the first headshot had already come from the grassy knoll. Dr. Thompson also covered the blood splatter pattern on the officers that were behind and to the left of the presidential limo. Former Secret Service agent Paul Landis gave a talk with Dr. Cyril Wecht about his recently announced recollection of finding a bullet that looked like CE-399 in the back seat behind President Kennedy. We spoke about Landis in depth last episode. Former head of military records at the Assassination Records Review Board, Doug Horn, laid out his theory of the timeline for multiple surgeries on President Kennedy's brain. I attended a panel presented by Dr. David Mantic about how the Zapruder film must have been altered. I also attended a panel by Robert Grodin, the man who originally showed the film on Geraldo with Dick Gregory, who says that the Zapruder film is definitely not altered. I was able to get in a question via Zoom to acclaimed director Rob Reiner. This guy was behind classic films like The Princess Bride, A Few Good Men, and Spinal Tap, just to name a few. Reiner just launched a new 10-episode podcast with Soledad O'Brien called Who Killed JFK? Here's what I asked him.
As everyone knows, this is a very complex case with lots of rabbit holes to go down. Could you just speak a little bit about your approach to figuring out what to include and what to leave out and constructing a narrative for people who may not be as familiar with everything as the folks in this room? Thank you.
That's a great question. That is a great question because there are a lot of rabbit holes to go down. And I've gone down virtually every one of them. But I wanted to tell the story in a way that experts like yourselves and people who have been following it closely will say, yes, that makes sense, and you're not being insulted by what we tell you. But I also wanted to tell the story in a way that people who didn't know anything about it could see how this worked and see how all these pieces came together. For most people, when a revelation comes forward, they look at it in isolation, and they don't think of it in terms of how it fits together in the overall picture. What we try to do with the podcast is take those revelations that are revealed, the revelation of George Joannides being the gatekeeper to the House Select Committee and him being overseeing the program that developed assets like Oswald. That's something that in and of itself, if that's all you heard, you wouldn't necessarily put it together. We have Paul Landis come on, who found the magic bullet, the single bullet that was in the backseat of, turns out it was in the backseat of the car. We talk about that. What we try to do is put it all together, tell it in a way that's digestible, but isn't an insult to the people that are sitting in that room, in the room that you guys are in.
I also went to a talk from Dr. John Newman, a professor at James Madison University, former military intelligence officer, and former assistant to the director of the National Security Agency. He spoke about Oswald's links to the CIA and the actions taken by CIA and FBI officials that suggest that Oswald was linked to intelligence. Jefferson Morley, a former Washington Post reporter who was one of the first mainstream reporters to cover the declassified records releases, shared what he learned in 30 years of covering Oswald and the CIA. I also learned from attorney Daniel Alcorn that the owner of the Texas School Book Depository, D.H. Byrd, was a business partner in a company called Timco, which provided various services to the CIA. Former ARRB investigator David Montague shared the process that was used by the ARRB, as well as some war stories, including how they found out that Richard Case Nagel had died after they sent him a registered letter saying that the ARRB wanted to speak with him. During that talk, Montague's ARRB colleague, Doug Horn, shared that when they asked the Secret Service for records of the advance plans for Dallas, Tampa, and Chicago during the fall of 1963, the Secret Service then destroyed the documents after the request had been made and admitted to having done so. They faced no consequences as a result of this. Finally, we heard from Salon.com founder and author of The Devil's Chessboard, David Talbot, about the future of the JFK assassination in the media and culture. During this talk, Talbot shared that he had been asked to write an opinion piece by the New York Times about the assassination. But after he sent the piece to the Times, they told him that it couldn't be published, because it's, quote, tricky for the New York Times opinion page to navigate truth and conspiracy. I don't know about you, but when I need to get into that Curtis LeMay sitting there watching the autopsy vibe, I look for a cigar that I can rely on. And that's why I love Thompson Cigar. They've been around since 1915, so they know a thing or two about cigars. Whether it's a quick five-pack for the weekend or joining one of their value clubs, Thompson makes it easy to save while enjoying top-notch cigars. It's like having your own personal humidor with deals that you can't pass up. Visit www.thompsoncigar.com/JFK or use code JFK at checkout for 20% off of your order of $75 or more. Discover why Thompson has been America's humidor since 1915 and join the thousands of satisfied customers who trust Thompson for quality, value, and exceptional service. This episode of Solving JFK is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings will vary. Not available in all states or situations. Okay, so those were the major talks that I went to. But the best part of the conference was meeting other people who, like me, believe that the Warren Report did not get it right and who have dedicated their lives to finding the truth. Here's a small lightning round style sampling of a few of the folks that I had the pleasure of hanging out with in Pittsburgh.
All right, if you just say your name?
Jacob Hornberger.
And how long have you been studying the JFK assassination?
Since Oliver Stone's movie, JFK, in around 1991.
Right on. Was that what got you interested in it?
That was what got me interested. I went to that movie never even having heard of anything that anybody was questioning the official story, and I had not read anything about the controversy, so I walked into the movie thinking I was going to just see a regular biography of John Kennedy, because I had campaigned for Kennedy when I was in the fifth grade. And I walked out of that movie just blown away what his thesis was.
Yeah. Or what would you say are the top two or three JFK assassination books that you'd recommend?
JFK and the Unspeakable by James W. Douglas is the absolute best. That's if nobody's familiar with, or if a person's not familiar with what's going on in this area, that's the book to read. The very best book is the watershed book, I consider a watershed book, called Inside the Assassination Records Review Board by Douglas Horn, who served on the staff of the Assassination Records Review Board in the 1990s. That's a difficult read, but to me, it's the watershed book. And I would also recommend my book, two books, The Kennedy Autopsy, which is really an easy-to-read synopsis of Doug Horn's five-volume book, and also my book, An Encounter with Evil, The Abraham Zapruder Story, which talks about the CIA's role in this particular, in the cover-up of the assassination.
In one sentence, who killed JFK?
The National Security Establishment. Pentagon, specifically the Pentagon and the CIA.
What one piece of evidence would you say is the most persuasive if you had to pick just one?
The fraudulent autopsy. That is case closed on the assassination, because that's the power of Doug Horn's book, his five-volume book, that he established beyond a reasonable doubt that the autopsy that was conducted on the very evening of the assassination was fraudulent. Well, once you establish a fraudulent autopsy beyond a reasonable doubt, that's case closed on the assassination itself, because there is no innocent explanation for a fraudulent autopsy.
What's your name?
Jeff Crudell.
Okay. And how long have you been studying the Kennedy assassination?
Probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 years.
What two to three books would you recommend for someone on the assassination, like your favorites, your go-tos?
Well, I would probably start with some of the original books, like Accessories After the Fact by Sylvia Maher. Not in Your Lifetime is an excellent book by Anthony Summers, which gives you a pretty broad look at it. I am not a fan of Gerald Posner, but at the end of the day, actually, there's a lot of good factual information in his book. I'm blanking on the name of it now.
Case Closed.
Case Closed. Henry Hertz, Reasonable Doubt, is a good book, too, as well. You know what? Honestly, there's a lot of them. Honestly, I don't agree with Vincent Bugliosi either, but if
valuable
you want
a
very valuable doc, especially for people who want a deeper look at some of the more detailed elements of a lot of situations. So,
if you had to pick one piece of evidence to focus on that is the most persuasive to you, what would that be?
A lot of people don't agree with me, but I actually think that one of the most incredible things about the entire moment in Dealey Plaza is the fact that very credible individuals, including law enforcement officers, moments after the shots were fired, came upon individuals who represented themselves to effectively be Secret Service agents, and they clearly were not. So I think that in and of itself says that there were nefarious things happening in Dealey Plaza at that moment.
And then last question, in one sentence, who killed JFK?
I don't know who killed JFK, but I know the forces that orchestrated it were clearly part of the CIA and perhaps other elements of the government. It was a very elegant plot that was put together by a subset of individuals with means within the government to do it.
Can you say your name?
I'm Doug Horn.
All right, and how long have you been studying the assassination?
Oh, I've been studying the assassination since 1965, when under the Weekly Reader program, I got my abridged paperback copy in grade school of the Warren Report.
What are the top two or three assassination books that you would recommend to others, aside from your own, which you can feel free to mention?
Well, you need to get started with the who and the why. So JFK in Vietnam by John Newman, JFK and the Unspeakable by James Douglas. I'll leave it at that. And then after that, you want to get into the medical evidence.
Inside the ARRB.
Yes, my five-volume memoir, over 1,800 pages, written over 3 years, between 2006 and 2009, about the fact that basically we had a fraudulent autopsy. There weren't just mistakes. It wasn't just incompetence. It was a fraudulent autopsy from the start to the end. There's no reason to have any faith in it whatsoever, and that was the contribution of the review board's medical depositions, that we should have no faith in the findings of the autopsy.
Who killed JFK in one sentence?
His enemies in the Pentagon and the CIA. It's not acceptable anymore to give a simplistic answer by saying the CIA killed Kennedy. That's Mark Lane, and as much as I love him, that's what Alec Baldwin said a couple of nights ago. No. Dr. John Newman, who was an Army intelligence officer and who worked in the NSA, he says he thinks that the Pentagon was at the galactic center of the assassination coup and that the CIA were their willing handmaidens. That's the new interpretation that we need in the research community. He's proving it with his series of books on the assassination, and you should start with his JFK in Vietnam.
What would you say is the most compelling piece of evidence or body of evidence if you had to point to just one area?
The most compelling body of evidence are the overwhelming numbers of conflicts within the medical evidence arena. They prove that the autopsy can't be trusted. You need to get down in the weeds and have patience to study that stuff. But the more you study it, the more problematic the evidence becomes, and you realize the American people have been lied to for 60 years by the government.
What's your name?
Jeff Morley from Washington, D.C.
All right. And how long have you been studying the assassination?
I have been reporting in earnest on the CIA's role in the Kennedy assassination for 29 years.
Wow. And what first got you into that?
The JFK Records Act passed in 1992, and that put a whole bunch of new government records into public view. Before that, I felt like I didn't have anything to add to the JFK story. When those new documents came out, I thought, this is going to be truly new, and I can do good journalism around this rather than speculate about old things.
And what would you say are the top two or three books on the assassination, aside from the ones you've written, which you can feel free to mention?
So my book, Our Man in Mexico, tells one key part of the story, what the surveillance of Oswald was like in Mexico City. I really like Jim Douglas's book, JFK and the Unspeakable, for the kind of the larger Cold War context. I really like a book that was written by Ernest Titovitz, a friend of Oswald in the Soviet Union, who writes a memoir of his friendship with Oswald. And it's a very interesting perspective on, you know, the accused assassin, on the patsy. So I like that. And then similarly, Lee Harvey Oswald, as I knew him, is the story of what George de Morenschild's friendship with Lee Harvey Oswald.
Morenschild's book.
And that is a very interesting book, too. So a little bit, not books about what happened in Dealey Plaza, but I think that are really illuminating about the story.
Who killed JFK in one sentence?
The president was killed by enemies in his own government, but who can't be identified individually.
And what piece of evidence would you say is the most persuasive or body of evidence, if you had to pick one?
I think the pre-assassination Oswald file, when you really understand that, you understand this guy was under surveillance for 4 years and was being used constantly for intelligence purposes. That's really key to understanding what happened on November 22nd.
Can you just say your name?
My name is Josiah Thompson.
When did you first start on the case? What year?
I went to the funeral.
Very beginning. Top three books.
What do you mean?
Top three books in the assassination.
Oh, I'm not going to do that.
Okay. Who killed Kennedy in one sentence?
I don't know. I just don't know.
All right.
Sometimes you do, sometimes you don't.
Most compelling piece of evidence to you?
I think the evidence that the impact debris from Kennedy's head went at great speed to the left rear. It shows where the shot came from, the knoll.
I appreciate it. That's it.
Well, you summarized it good.
Yeah, right, straight to the point.
Next time on Solving JFK, we'll start to answer the question of who was Lee Harvey Oswald really by going back to the beginning. What was Oswald like as a kid? Where did he live? And what can we learn from his school records? If you heard anything on this episode that lacks context or you think is incorrect, please let us know. You can email solvingjfkpodcast@gmail.com. Please provide a citation and we'll consider it for a future rebuttal episode.
In Dallas, Texas, three shots were fired at President Kennedy's motorcade in downtown Dallas.
The flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time.
Thanks for listening. Visit solvingjfkpodcast.com.